In the past few weeks, you've heard stories of families having to flee their homes from bushfires over east. People in Sydney being treated for asthma and other respiratory conditions due to thick smoke. And as the people of Yarloop, Esperance, Parkerville know, it can take years to recover from a bushfire. A forum in Perth tomorrow will discuss how climate changes affect your health and the ability of our health services to respond.
Now, there's been a lot of work already underway in this space. In March this year, the state government established a WA Climate Health Inquiry to investigate the implications of climate change, including more frequent and intense weather events, on public health. Now, this inquiry has taken public submissions and it's held public forums and is due to report back early next year. Taran Weeramanthra is chair of that inquiry. He was, for 10 years, the chief health officer in WA, and he's here to explain what climate health is and answer your questions. So if you have one, 1300 222 720. Taran, thanks for coming in this morning.
Morning, Nadia.
So what health conditions are we talking about when we talk about influences on our health by climate change?
So as Russell pointed out, they're fairly obvious, the health effects. So when we look at a bushfire that's burning, or we look at floods in the north of the state, or we look at heat waves and hot days in summer, and, you know, I just heard the weather report predicting 41 or something. Each of those is a distinct health event, and we're used to responding to them. And so if there is a process of climate change and we're all becoming more educated about the facts and the trends, then there are clear implications for the health system, because you can get injured or you can die in a storm or a bushfire or a flood. People can get cut off from health services, as we saw with, you know, Cyclone Veronica in the state earlier this year, in the Pilbara. South Hedland gets cut off from Port Hedland. You know, if you're a pregnant woman, you can't get access to healthcare, whatever it is. They're kind of things we've been thinking about for a very long time and planning for. So the Minister for Health earlier this year said, look, we need to have a further look at this, but we also need to look at the health sector itself and what contribution the health sector is making to climate change as well. Because we're a big sector, you know, we do a lot of good, you know, but we have these big hospitals that are open 24 hours a day, 365 days of the year. And the health sector as a whole, public and private, contributes about 7% of all emissions. So our staff, who are considerable, you know, you go walk into Fiona Stanley in the morning and it's, you know, a city of people, thousands of people milling around. Our staff are doing stuff at home because they're concerned citizens, they're trying to reduce their waste, they're trying to look at energy efficiency. And when they come to work, they also want to be part of a system that's doing its best to deliver great patient care, but also reduce waste and do what's sensible. So there's two parts of this inquiry. One is, how do we respond to what's the kind of obvious health impacts? And we can talk about some of the not so obvious ones as well. But also, how can the health sector do its bit to reduce our own emissions and waste?
Okay, so two parts there. First of all, let's look at some of the impacts on our health, because you mentioned physical issues. Are there mental health issues? And I'm thinking post-traumatic stress disorder, for instance.
So clearly that's part of what we see with any natural disaster. The key thing is that as the risk increases, the frequency of extreme weather events, natural disasters increases, and the frequency of what happens afterwards increases. So again, you mentioned the Yarloop fires. You know, that's not a one-off event. That's a years and years of recovery, mental health and community recovery and building back the community. And, you know, that's the really hard stuff. We are used to doing that. And one of the strengths in Western Australia is we do have great kind of disaster systems. So in this inquiry, we've talked to the Commissioner for Fire and Emergency Services, so the chair of the State Emergency Management Committee, and we've got very well-established relationships and partnerships and disasters, and we need to think about whether those need to be bolstered a bit. And clearly, with an increased frequency of events, that may need to happen. The other thing that's been really good from this inquiry is that we'll have talked about 35 different expert witnesses from this state, and they've all been very clear and talked in practical language about what they're doing and what they'd like to do more of.
So have you found some shortfalls then in the system when you talk about the need to maybe bolster some of the aspects of our health system to respond? What have you found? Where are we lagging?
So our job at the moment is to collect all what people are saying, and then we'll come up with the final report. But look, everyone is talking across this country that the fire seasons are getting longer, for example. Well, what does that mean? How do we prepare better? Just, you know, acknowledging we've got good strengths, what more needs to be done? And you don't have to listen to me. You can go onto the website, you can listen to the Commission on Fire and Emergency Services talk about how he's seeing it. So we're not trying to be the experts. There are a lot of experts out there, and they're experts in their own areas, and they're telling us what's reasonable and practical to do. What we have to do is to say, well, what does that mean for health? And, for example, our health services already work with the fire and emergency services. We might have a heat wave plus a bushfire. You know, we have the state's emergency preparedness report that goes out this time every year. And as a state, we say, well, it's great that it's coming into summer. You know, we love hot weather and we love cricket, but there's other issues that we have to prepare for. And, you know, how do we do that? And so, you know, my previous job, if there was a heat wave coming, we'd get out there and we'd message the public and we'd say what needs to be done, which are the vulnerable groups, and we need to work with them.
The increase in frequency is the key, isn't it? I mean, and so we like to think we're very good at the way we deal with a bushfire or a cyclone or a flood, a drought, you know, all of these natural disasters. We've got experience with them. But if instead of having an average of 10 cyclone crossings, we have an average of 15, then that has a significant impact on budgets. I mean, so is it saying we've got the model because we know as a health department how to deal with these things, but because we have an expectation that the frequency is going to increase, it's really a resourcing issue immediately, isn't it? It's about getting more money.
Well, I think the issue is that what was previously, you know, 1 in 100, 1 in 50-year events are now becoming whatever, 1 in 10-year events.
Yeah.
So we are seeing these things more frequently. And there is a difference between, you know, having 3 or 4 days over 35 or over 40 in a year versus having many more. So, you know, there are heat waves, which are like 3 days of very high temperature, but there's also just more hot days in summer.
Yeah.
As I was coming in today, I was watching, you know, builders on the roof of a suburban house. So they're going to be up there doing their stuff through the summer. And it's that accumulation of hot days, even if it falls short of heat wave, that is important. So occupational health and safety, etc.
So how does that manifest itself then, in terms of the impact it has on WA's health department?
So we're trying to... So there are physical health effects, but you've also mentioned mental health effects. And we're collecting as well stories from people across the state. This is a West Australian inquiry. So you read a lot about climate change globally, nationally. What this is particularly important is collect the stories of West Australians. So we've been right around the state and talked to people, held public forums, and we've heard their concerns. In the north, you know, it's clearly about, you know, it's getting hotter, there are increased risk of heavy cyclones and flooding. There are some communities where water is drying up. You know, people have real concerns. Aboriginal people are talking about the change in country that they see. On the coast, there's a whole lot of local governments that are really worried about coastal erosion. In the wheat belt, it may be more around those mental health, agricultural effects. But it's not just about farmers and post-traumatic stress disorders, but it's also about the impact on the local community and how that ripples through a community and all the services and industries and people who live in those regions. So they've told us their own stories, and we'll try and capture those stories to give you a West Australian picture. In each of those stories as well, there are in each of those regions, there are stories about what people are doing and how they're responding. That's the other part of this inquiry. People are doing things, both themselves, in their families, but also in their health services. They're coming up with good ideas, and we have to be kind of optimistic and practical about what the health service can do to reduce its impact.
Taran Wiramantha is our guest. He's the chair of the WA Climate Health Inquiry. He was the chief health officer in WA for 10 years, and he is explaining climate health basically to you and the impacts of climate change and how it is affecting your health. And look, if you've got a story to share, because this inquiry is about capturing those stories, whether you're up north or down south or in the wheat belt or here in Perth, you've heard some of the examples there that Taran's given you. Give us a call and share them. I know he'd love to hear from you. 1300 222 720. What about from a health point of view, as in what they need to do to contribute to this? Because you're talking about waste reduction and things like that, which I assume would be very difficult in the medical world when you can only use a syringe once, or and having a sterile environment is very important.
So that's a great starting point. So as part of this inquiry, we've heard from every health service. So, you know, all those big health services, North Metro, East Metro, etc. And they've given us written submissions. They've also come and talked to the inquiry in these series of hearings. So tomorrow's event's not a one-off. It's one of seven hearings. And we've got, just out of those seven hearings, we've got a couple of national experts who we've asked to come over and give evidence, all the rest are West Australians. But the chairs of the health service boards and the chief executives have come and told us what they're doing. And it's different in each place, but they're saying, look, we're doing what we can because there is a lot of waste in hospitals. And people are thinking, do we really need this? Is it an infection control issue? Do we really need to throw away all this stuff, even if you've opened this packet and used one item? Does everything need to be disposed?
Or is it just habit?
So is it cost? Is it habit? Or is there a real infection control issue? And I think we need to rethink that because we probably made those decisions a long time ago and now we've kind of forgotten why we do some of what we do. It's just become part of how we do it. But it's kind of wasteful. And there are real benefits here. If you could reduce the waste, you would save money, and that money can go back into better patient care.
Do you know roughly, I mean, have you done those measurements yet or any estimation? Because you wouldn't be talking just about hospitals. That would be GP clinics, you know, those...
Health services across the state.
Yeah.
X-raying.
Yeah.
You know, the use of X-ray, that must be have a negative impact on the environment ultimately.
So there's some initiatives that have been in place which have a positive environmental impact. So you think about the move from having all of those hard copy X-rays to digital X-rays.
Yeah.
It's an awful lot of, you know, bits of X-rays that you don't have to have physically anymore. So that's a positive impact. So this whole digital thing, the digital strategy that people are trying to move towards in health, will have a positive environmental impact if you can reduce the paper and all the other stuff.
Yeah.
You don't want both, right?
Yeah.
And so there are some initiatives around, you know, choosing wisely, making sure you don't get duplication of tests. And if you can reduce the amount of stuff we do unnecessarily, which has been estimated at around a third of all healthcare, which is kind of an extraordinary thing, if you could just reduce that a bit, it'd have a major environmental positive impact.
So you're talking about too much testing of patients, which we know is a problem. Go and grab an ultrasound.
That doubling up process you're talking about is responsible for about one third of our health services.
So not just that doubling up process, but they've kind of done overall estimates of how much is unnecessary or overuse or not proven to be effective. And it's about 30% if you believe the evidence. Even if it's not that much, it's still not a trivial amount. So if we could get better connections between primary care, evidence, you know, do you really need to go to the public hospital or could it be treated in the community, and just remodel our health system in the ways people have been talking about for a long time, this environmental consideration now gives that added impetus.
It's fascinating. It really is interesting. When I knew we were talking about this, I wasn't thinking we were talking about how hospitals, for example, could become smarter about waste. I mean, it's a really good, interesting topic for you to be discussing. Are members of the public allowed to come along to these forums?
Yes, they're encouraged to. It's all on the websites. If you use your favourite search engine and go put in Climate Health WA Inquiry, you can register, but even if you don't register, please come along on a Thursday, tomorrow and next Thursday.
Yeah, and it's an important conversation to have, but we have to have it now because planning for these things is not going to happen overnight. I mean, this is something that's going to take, you know, a decade or so. Thank you so much, Taryn. Good to have you in.
Thank you.
Taryn Wiramanthi there, Chair of the WA Climate Health Inquiry, and if you are interested, get along to those forums.
Regional WA, has been lovely to spend the time with you this morning. We look forward to...